This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The last week in January, hard to believe that we're here already, but yes, we are. How about those resolutions? Have they gone down the drain, or are you keeping the resolutions, or you're smart like me and you don't make them because you won't keep them anyway? Kate Delaney, thanks so much for joining us, whether you're a first time or you've been here for a very, very long time with us as we really celebrate 15 years. Hard to believe that I've been doing this for 15 years, and I love every second of it. So thanks for so many of you supporting the show. I'm getting your cards and your emails and everything else in between. One thing I have not gotten, and I've been asked about this, I have not had COVID. Many of you have emailed me to tell me that you've gotten COVID, but you're okay with an Omicron infection, that it was maybe a rough day or two. And it's interesting to sort of take the temperature of what people are saying about it, because we still are living in this world where over the weekend you had a big anti-vax rally in Washington, D.C., a march on the mall where thousands were there, and Robert Kennedy Jr. spoke, for example, and he's been on the show in the past talking about vaccines before the pandemic when he was on this show. But he definitely has talked about that a lot, and he was one of the people that was there, and there were others, and people came from all over the place to, you know, let their voices be heard. So while that's going on, there's lots of problems with vaccine mandates, although the big mandate, of course, was shot down by the Supreme Court, and that did not kick in. But many companies have vaccine mandates, and people are struggling with that and, you know, what to do. And in the meantime, there are events that have been pushed aside and rescheduled. There have been concerts that have been pushed over. There have been schools that are now going to remote again, at least for a little while. And we've got the Olympics coming up. Coming up on this show on February 3rd, we're going to talk to a former Olympian, Nancy Kerrigan. It'll be interesting to get her take on what's happening with the Olympics and figure skating and all that stuff. But thousands of Olympians worldwide are struggling to avoid COVID-19 infections before their competitions, because no matter how they've trained or whatever, it's somehow, even being boosted because they're required to have the vaccines, they still could get it. And China is saying that they have, they're warning broadcasters and sponsors not to bend to calls for boycotts over the crackdown in Hong Kong and repressions in other spots, etc. And they're appealing to what's being said. In fact, it's just days away, the games, really. The president is defying critics and delivering the event in what he says is his own terms. So what does that mean? And it means that, you know, China has not a lot of experience with winter sports, right? Because little snow falls in the hills where the outdoor events would even take place. So they're resolving that we promised to put this on, we're putting this on, and they've gone through the obstacles that made it seem like such a long shot in the past, and with the unending pandemic and the international concerns over what China's politics are, authoritarian politics, but they're brushing all of that aside and moving forward, and they've insisted on sustaining this zero COVID strategy that evolved from China's first lockdown in Wuhan a couple of years ago, regardless of the cost to its economy and its people. So the, you know, the IOC has become dependent on China and its huge market. So here's the thing. When you look at the Olympics, you're not going to have the crowds. They're not going to have the sales that they would normally have. And you you're having these Olympics in a place where you rarely get snow. And you're having the Olympic Games in a place where China is ruthless in some cases, needless to say. Ask the people in Hong Kong. But they move forward. So you have figure skating, short track, speed skating. They're happening at an indoor stadium, the venue of the ping pong diplomacy, you know, is what they're saying. If you look at where it was between the United States and China in 1971 and Olympic volleyball in 2008, that's that Capitol indoor stadium. So there's kind of some memories there. And China promised to spend only $1.5 billion on capital projects at the venues, plus that much in operating expenses, a fraction of the cost for Sochi or the 2018 Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea, which cost nearly $13 billion. So it's interesting because there are still so many question marks as to who could possibly get caught up in COVID and how does that all unfold as the Olympics, the curtain on the Olympics will rise on February 3rd. And as I said, we'll talk to a former figure skater, Olympian Nancy Kerrigan. It'll be interesting to get her take on a lot of what is happening. And besides that, just quickly here at the top, because I know many of you may have spent the weekend watching what happened in the NFL. What a thrilling weekend it was. The Bengals beat the Titans thanks to a kick and won it in the field goal with a rookie kicker, 19-16. The 49ers won it with a veteran kicker, 13-10, over the Packers, no less. On Sunday, the Rams beat the Buccaneers. That's right, Super Bowl winning Tom Brady, Buccaneers, 30-27. It's just a kick, but it was a kick from the foot of Gay that worked. And then in overtime, the Chiefs with the touchdown, they win the coin toss. They get the ball first, 42-36, and that was the thriller. So all four games ended in a really thrilling manner. Meanwhile, as we look at what's happening that's affecting you and I, besides enjoying some football games, perhaps if you do like to watch football, the other thing is what I just mentioned, not just the effect of what's going on with Omicron on the world stage that could affect some of our athletes, but also what's happening in different frontline jobs with Omicron spread where people can't come into work, like hospitals. I mean, hospitals are asking workers with COVID to return, even if they might be infectious, because they don't have enough people to work. And how can they take care of the sick people, the people who are sick with COVID, if they don't have enough people on the job? Wow, that is scary, and it underscores how hyper-transmissible Omicron, the variant, really is. Stay with us.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scent hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdiarco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Do you feel like you're doing what you were made for? Do you love what you do? Do you feel inspired or at least pretty happy most days? In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big and Become Extraordinary, I share the secrets that rock stars shared with me from the business world, people like Sir Richard Branson, or sports hall of famers like former Cowboy great Emmitt Smith. All of them had one thing in common. They paid attention to their gut, followed their dreams, and didn't listen to the critics. George Eliot says it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of Deal Your Own Destiny on Amazon today. Introduce you to A.G. Castillo. He's written a book, Valente, Courage and Consequences. Ooh, Courage and Consequences. I was thinking about this the other night. We had a great off-air conversation, and so I do know a little bit about A.G., and I think you'll really enjoy his story. A.G., thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's talk about the road to writing this book. How did this happen?
You know, it's been a long time coming, I think. I've always enjoyed English. I'm an English teacher, and so English has always been easy for me. So back in Texas Tech, when I was an undergraduate of Texas Tech, I took a creative writing course, and I wrote a short story. And one of the notes that my professor left me was, this would be a great first chapter for a novel. And I said, yeah. I put it away. You know, I'm in college. This is the last thing I want to think about, writing a book. And then a couple of years ago, I had some time on my hands with cleaning out some drawers. I came across it and read it and thought, gee, okay. You know, I'm older, a different perspective. And, yeah, I just kind of sat down and started outlining it, and it just kind of all fell out. So that's kind of how it started. It started with, you know, 25 years ago at Texas Tech, and it ended up as this novel.
That's why I think you don't let go of your dreams. You put them in a drawer. A professor so awesome that he told you that, hey, this would make a great book. He knew because he read it and he was interested in the story and he wanted more. So tell right. us more. You're not going to be able to tell us everything because, of course, go buy the book on Amazon. But tell us about the story.
You know, I think the story, the message I wanted to get across is a few things. I wanted my story to be about a middle class Latino family with very normal life, but a character who was struggling with the reflection in the mirror, really scared about, you know, coming to terms with who he was as a man, and just the trials and tribulations he goes to get there. You know, and as you know, as a teacher, I see it often how my students struggle to find their identity. And the book is about that. It's about embracing who you are, looking at the mirror, and being happy with what you see, in a nutshell.
Ooh, so the main character. Tell us about the main character.
The main character is, you know, what I wanted to do. I wanted to have a character that transcended the barriers or the stereotypes of what sometimes society views a gay man to be.
Mm-hmm.
The main character is an athlete, a stud athlete, who excels in sports, excels in the classroom, is the most popular student in the school, and yet is carrying a secret that he's gay and doesn't know how to come to terms with that, has a great circle of friends, but even then is too scared to share his truth, has a great family, but still again is too scared to share his truth. That's what the main character is about. And him finding who he is takes courage, but there's also consequences that come with that.
Thus the name of the book, Valente, Courage and Consequences. And you've wrapped this into it. I love the message about so many, you see it with students struggling to find their identity. And I think that's one of the themes of the book. But what do you hope the big takeaway is for anybody who reads your novel?
You know, I think for me is being happy with who you are, understanding that embracing your differences, embracing, the differences is what make us special. Understanding that not everyone's going to be the same. Understanding that sometimes, you know, stepping out and trusting that close friend, that family member, and sharing with them who you are, can turn your life around. You don't have to carry these secrets alone. Have the courage to embrace who you are, I guess.
That's a wonderful message. And the book, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold, Valente, Courage and Consequences. A.G. Castillo, thank you so much, and congratulations on the book, and we look forward to more of your writing.
I appreciate the time, and yes, thank you so much. I appreciate everything that you're doing.
All right, it's interesting. You know, I look at this upcoming week, and boy, oh boy, I think about the setup I was mentioning about the football games this past weekend. And now we have the AFC and the NFC championship game. And we have two superstar players, Aaron Rodgers, who's won just one Super Bowl, Tom Brady, who has more than a fistful of Super Bowl rings, considering perhaps that they're going to step away from the game, both of them with really losses, crazy losses over the weekend that were, I think, unexpected. The Buccaneers, you knew, would be challenged by the Rams, but maybe you always figured they would pull it out. They didn't. I mentioned that at the top. And then the Packers hosting at home, perfect at home, shocker, just not having it. So they lose, and now the road to the Super Bowl does not go through either one of those teams. Instead, next Sunday, you have a 3:00 kick of the Bengals and the Chiefs for the AFC Championship, and you've got the 49ers and the Rams for the NFC Championship, so it's like the Battle of California, of Northern California and Southern California, which is crazy, and the idea that these two could maybe retire. Who knows? I mean, I think that's one of the storylines that we're going to hear over and over again. If you're a sports fan, in our upcoming segments, Man Cave segments, we'll talk about it. I wanted to mention that we will do a Super Bowl Nail the Score. It'll be the Tuesday before the Super Bowl that we'll do that. And it's your chance to win some incredible prizes if you can nail the score. And we'll have a couple of different ways that you can do that for sure, and have a lot of fun with that. I would love to see somebody win that. I mean, it would be incredible. We've had winners in the past, and it's one of our fun little giveaway things on a segment that we do. It's just one segment a week during football season, and that will cap the football season. So there you go. All right, a couple of quick hits here. What in the world is going on in Manhattan with the subways? Would you get, I'm asking you this question, if you went to New York, would you get on, and I know there's people listening to us in that area, would you get on a subway? It's the way you really move around that city. A 62-year-old man suffered minor injuries. He was pushed onto the tracks at a popular station, the Fulton Street subway station, in Lower Manhattan on Sunday morning. He, the man who had not been identified made contact with the lead train car while he was on the tracks. So he was taken to the hospital. He had cuts on his leg, and it's unknown if he was targeted or not, but they're having more incidents that are happening. I have to think that some people don't want to get on the subway and stand on the platform and wait. You had the sad death of Michelle Goh, who was an Asian-American woman who was pushed in front of the Times Square subway train, and her death has contributed to these efforts to raise awareness to what is happening. And this was just an insane thing that happened. A man charged with second-degree murder in connection with her death, and it has just shocked the city. The city has seen crime rise massively during the pandemic, and they've got a few crises on their hands, and there's no question about it. They're saying, do you tell people, should you stand on the subway platform, or could you be in fear for your life? I mean, you got to sit down, and you got to wait for, you got to stand in there and wait for a train. What are you going to do? And this, unfortunately, is the kind of, I think this is the kind of conversations that are happening in other places, too. But in New York, we've seen a lot of people flee from New York during the pandemic because of things like that. Absolutely. All right. Also, this is interesting. The U.S. suspended 44 China-bound flights from Chinese airlines. So Washington has suspended 36 flights from these Chinese carriers over the next couple of months in this escalation in a spat over pandemic-related travel rules between the U.S. and China. On Friday, the U.S. Transportation Department said, they're going to suspend those 44 flights. And it applies to popular airlines where people are going, back and forth. Many, many have been canceled because of what they're calling the circuit breaker rule. That applies to international flights. It was enacted last June. What does it mean? It means that a flight is automatically suspended for 2 weeks if 5 or more passengers test positive upon landing in China. If 10 or more passengers test positive, the suspension period increases. See, it's all very, very complicated, and yet this in the middle of the Winter Olympics coming up. Stay with us.
We depend on our drinking water supply daily, but where does that water come from? Your water provider encourages you to get to know your local water source so together we can protect and preserve it. The investments we make as a community to protect our water source now ensure we have a sustainable drinking water supply for the future. Visit drinktap.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Russia claims it's not planning to invade Ukraine, but with nearly 150,000 troops on the border with Ukraine, People are wondering what their plan is. Republican Senator from Iowa Joni Ernst tells ABC's This Week the Biden administration is not curbing Russia.
So far with this administration, we have seen a doctrine of appeasement, and that certainly is not going to deter President Putin and Russia from invading Ukraine.
Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware, has this.
The very strongest sanctions, the sorts of sanctions that we use to bring Iran to the table, is something that we should hold out as a deterrent to prevent Putin from taking the last step of invading Ukraine.
Administration sources are confirming the State Department is now planning evacuations for diplomats. This is USA Radio News. A sheriff's corporal in Harris County, Texas, Charles Galloway, was shot and killed during a traffic stop in southwest Houston. The police department there is heading the investigation. Chief Troy Finner says the suspect, who is described as a Hispanic male, got out of his car and opened fire on the officers.
We believe, and witnesses said, it was an assault-type weapon.
This shooting is only one day after two New York City police officers were shot. One of them has succumbed to his injuries. Firefighters in California say they have about a 25% containment of a 1,500-acre wildfire burning in the Big Sur area. This has led to the evacuation of about 500 residents. CAL FIRE official Cecile Juliet says coastal regions are no longer safe from fires that happen in the winter.
Now our fires are extending all the way through December and then into January.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
We head to Australia for a conversation with Ron Wilson. He's written a fascinating book about a man called Joseph Akeroyd, rediscovering a prison reformer. And, you know, we've talked a lot about prisons on this show. And for Ron, so much of his life, prison education, corrections, and he saw what was happening. And it got that curiosity about a man who was there in a time when you talk about the 20s, 30s, and 40s, think about that, what that would be like, and how he was really miscast in history. And it's fascinating what Ron has done in this book. Ron, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks, Kate. I'm delighted to be able to talk with you.
So I asked you this question off the air. What made you decide you were going to dig into his background? Why'd you do this book?
Kate, I started teaching in the prison system. This is back in 1977. And from that period of time, I developed a real passion into the importance of the role of education within the prison environment. And it was coming through that period of time where Victoria was quite a unique prison environment. And Victoria is a state or a jurisdiction, a state of within Australia. What happened in the way that prison education was managed in Victoria at that time was so different from other jurisdictions in Australia, but also quite different from other jurisdictions in the world. And each school, each prison was, in actual fact, a registered school. It was funded. The education was funded by the education department. It was staffed by teachers who were the same teachers delivering the same curriculum and programs as what was happening in the much broader community. And over the period of time, I started to wonder why is it so different? What was it so different about Victoria that it's gone down that path to do that and have that strong focus in the importance of education within a prison environment? And I'm talking about prisons, I'm also talking about juvenile justice areas. The same thing was happening in Victoria. And as I started to explore that further, I started to get an emergence or get a feeling, get a knowledge that things changed in the 1920s in Victoria, and quite a significant change. And the more I delved in to try to find out that, it emerged that this fellow, Joseph Akeroyd, was at the core. Now, I didn't know a huge amount of Joseph Akeroyd, and what I did know about him, the way that people talked about him, is recorded as saying that he was a really hard-line guy, pro-punishment and the like. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's interesting. But I also knew and found out that he was a teacher immediately before he came into the prison environment. He was an inspector of the schools. He actually served in World War One, was injured in World War One, came back to the education and went straight from education, from being an inspector of schools, into being the inspector general of the prisons, and held that role for being the longest service held for almost 30 years. And he was probably pivotal in this one. And I thought it'd be interesting to try and find out a bit more about Joseph Akeroyd. And what was driving him, and what was the motivations of that period of time?
Wow.
I was lucky enough.
And what did you find out? I mean, take us right there. What did you find out that maybe surprised you or just kind of popped out at you?
Well, I was really lucky enough to – actually, it's probably a tap on the shoulder saying that there's a whole series of papers of Joseph Akeroyd's personal diaries – and his personal papers, his official papers, letters that he'd kept and letters that he'd sent copies of them all, they're all on records. And I was lucky enough to be able to tap on the shoulder saying, if you want to know about him, find out a bit more. So what I did through was actually go through all of these diaries and all of these papers and just the most extraordinary wealth of information, insights into Joseph Akeroyd. And what I did find out was he was a man who came into his role with the strong commitment to saying, as an educator, using the principles in terms of education principles and the principles of teaching, this is the way he would say, this is what he did say, this is the way that prisons should be managed. They should be managed on the principles of education and the principles of teaching. So that set the platform to think, how did he do that? And given if we talked about that time, 1920s, you know, from 1924 and that period of time between the two world wars, between over the Great Depression, after the Spanish flu pandemic that was coming right through all of Australia and particularly hit Victoria as well. What happened in this area that this guy started to bring these significant changes about the way prisons managed when reform just wasn't on the agenda anywhere in the world, particularly in prison education space. And it was through his motivation, his commitment to these principles, that he started to introduce these reforms. Prisons up to then were punitive. You know, people saw the role to be purely punishment. That's what they were there for. They were there to be, for people who put away to be punished. And with the intent, some ways that the punishment might change people, but the reality is, they were there to be punished for particular behaviours. Akeroyd, in his educational principles, said, what we've got to do is actually start to have a look at why these people are in prison. What's happened to the – look at – as he you quote in the book, look at the man. What's the background? What's happened to this man that he's ended up in a prison environment? And so a lot of his records are starting for him to start to have the stories and conversations with individual prisoners, started to take – he personally took case studies of a range of these prisoners to start to work on saying, what happened to this fellow? What do we need to do that's going to help him become a, using Akeroyd's terms, a productive member of our society? And so he started to really formalise the ways that we started to look at and analyse the people, their needs, their background, their needs – and implemented treatment, what he called a therapeutic or a treatment-based approach rather than the punitive approach. And that therein led the major conflict for Akeroyd in that time. And I say that because the conflict was that as the Inspector General, he was expected to carry out the mandates of the court. He was expected to make sure that the hangings took place, that the whippings that were mandated by the court, and whippings and birchings were practiced in those days. He had to make sure that those things were carried out. They were very punitive actions. Yet here he was as an educationalist. The major conflict that occurred from Akeroyd was how was he able to reconcile the implementation and the management of these significant punitive events whilst maintaining his principles and his values as an educator. And one of the things I'll share with you, Kate, that, again, it's in the book, but it's something that I thought was really important, is that he knew that he could not fight against the mandate and the pressure of the courts and what the courts expected, nor of the politicians at the time, of what they expected, what was important to them in the way that they managed law and order and so on. But he didn't lose the commitment to his education principles. So what he did, and again, I've got some evidence of that in the book that's, I think, really fascinating reading, is that he started to have conversations with the prisoners who were about to be whipped, as an example. And he would converse with them, have a conversation with them before the whipping. Personally, he would do this. And then after the whipping, but he would ask the question, he's got this recorded. He said, "What did you learn from this experience?" So he had to turn the punishment into a learning experience. And this is the way that he started to try and reconcile his approach to dealing with the fact of those things that he couldn't change, but turn it into a way that he was able to then accommodate that within himself with those guys who were going to be hanged. Now, he applied the similar sort of a structure. Now, he couldn't have the conversations with someone after they'd been hanged, but what he did do was able to have the conversations with other prisoners around, saying, "What did this experience of you being so close to a hanging, what did it tell you? What did you learn from that? What was the experience that you gained?" So he would have those conversations. But also, in his papers, he had letters. And these letters were received from those prisoners who were about to be hanged. He kept letters and transactions of these conversations that the prisoners had with people who'd written to them. You know, some people who had learned about them saying, "Okay, you've been sentenced. You've been sentenced to hang. You know, some people are saying, we're going to give you some comfort," whatever it may be, you know, try to give some spiritual comfort about going to. But also what it did is start to garner the experience of these prisoners as saying, "Well, I know that I have been sentenced to hang. I've got an appeal. I'm hopeful that I can get it overturned at the appeal." So he's got the letters of this hope that things might be overturned the appeal. Then after the appeal, the realisation that the appeal was turned down and they're going to die. Now, here are the letters coming up talking about people there coming to grips with their own mortality, the knowing that they're going to die at a particular period of time, and how they translated and communicated that with others. It's fascinating, but again, from Akeroyd's perspective, these are how he translated these punitive events into learning experiences, and how did others learn, and how do we communicate that and connect that with community about learning about what happens in a prison environment, what happens in the way that the treatment programs run, what happens in terms of understanding the lives of people that lead up to these catastrophic events for individuals that's resulted in harm to someone, but also have this significant impact on the individual, in some cases ending their life.
Yeah, perfect place to end this. Joseph Akeroyd, fascinating man, rediscovering a prison reformer. Ron Wilson, wow, bravo, digging all that up and putting that together. And you can get that on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever great books are sold. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kat. I really appreciate the time and I enjoy talking with you. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
If you feel America is facing more dangers than ever, you're right. An increasing number of things are falling apart daily. That's why you need to prepare for more of the unexpected, and that includes food shortages. When people panic, grocery stores run out of food fast. Would you survive without food for days, weeks, even months? The smart folks are buying emergency food now. Take this moment to shop MyPatriotSupply.com. We're America's leader in preparedness. My Patriot Supply has earned over 47,000 four-star and five-star reviews. Our delicious food kits average 2,000 calories per day and last up to 25 years in storage, so it's there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a food kit or two, and we'll ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait for the news to tell you something bad happened again. Rather, be more self-reliant and prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
This hour out with just the facts as I know them to be true. It was last Thursday. Yes, I'm going back to last week, January 20th, the first episode of Breaking Bad aired on AMC, the crime drama won 16 Emmys out of 58 nominations. I have to say I was a fan of Breaking Bad. I didn't watch it when it was first on. I didn't even pay attention to it, and then somebody turned me on to it, and I love me some Breaking Bad, so much so that when I went to Albuquerque, if you remember, in the summer, I took the show there to New Mexico. I went, they have a store, and it's got Breaking Bad memorabilia in it, and the guy had a lot of some of the sets from Breaking Bad. It was very, very cool. If you are a fan, when you go to Albuquerque, which you should put on your bucket list, by the way, because it's so fun, and the food is incredible, go to the plaza. There's a Breaking Bad store, and you'll diggity dig it. I'm serious. You will dig it. All right. Again, just the facts as I know them to be true. How about this? Vishal Garg. Do you know that name? He's the CEO of Better.com. We talked about him on the air, actually. He made a lot of noise because he fired 900 employees on a Zoom call. So all these people went to the Zoom call having no idea, most of them, what it was about. And now he's returned as the CEO. He had to take leave from work to work with an executive coach in December. Oh, that's rough. That was pretty bold what you did with Zoom. So we're going to hire an expensive executive coach and make sure that you are better at doing your job. Do you ever have a job like that? That's just
wow, that's a pretty good job where you can do what he did and, again, generate all that heat, but it's okay in the end. Here's something that's interesting that I found in a thing I get called The Hustle. They were doing a story about customers who repeatedly buy doomed products. So you like it, so you just buy it. And what they found out is typically at a typical company, 80% of the revenue, of course, is generated by just 20% of the customers. The top 10% spend 3 times more than the average customer. But it turns out that not all customers who buy new products, it's not always great for business. In fact, research is suggesting that a certain fraction of you and I, consumers, are skilled at picking out products that are destined to fail or get discounted. So here's what happened. I'm going to give you the goods on this, just the facts. In 2015, a team of researchers at Northwestern and MIT analyzed 6 years' worth of transaction data from 130 customers. That's pretty big, at a large national retail chain. They found that 25% of the customers consistently buy products that end up flopping within 3 years. So some of them were things like Crystal Pepsi. Remember that? Do you remember watermelon Oreos? Come on, watermelon Oreos? Frito-Lay lemonade? I remember this one. Coors Rocky Mountain sparkling water. Do we have not a million brands of sparkling water? Colgate kitchen entrees? Mm-mm. How about this? This was one of my favorites. Cheetos lip balm? How about Jimmy Dean's chocolate chip pancake wrap sausage? I like chocolate chip pancakes, but wrap sausage? I don't know. Clairol's touch of yogurt shampoo. Who came up with that? I think the ladies would like to put yogurt in their hair. I mean, look, yogurt's good for you, but I don't know, throwing it in your hair? Ooh. Anyway, I could go on and on about this, but I thought it was so fascinating what they found out in this study, you know, looking at What is it? Why is it the desire to buy new offerings? And that's how some people roll, right? They just like to try weird things, whether it's the purple colored Heinz Easy Squirt ketchup or everyone in town. Just it was a word of mouth. And so you started buying it because other people were buying it, even if it didn't soar. You know, the worst part about that whole thing is if you like something and then it fails, right? So once it fails and they stop making it, then the stuff that you really, really decided you like to eat, like that purple stuff, is gone. And it's such a bummer. I mean, seriously, it's awful when that happens because there's no really replacement for it, right? Yeah, there's no replacement for it. All right, this is just the facts as I know them to be true. And so this is pretty good. I think this is pretty good. When we look at NFTs, the Associated Press announced plans to launch an NFT marketplace where collectors can purchase the agency's historic photojournalism. So people who think non-fungible tokens are just a bunch of nonsense, and they can't make heads or tails of it. These things are here to stay because everybody is jumping on it. When you have the Associated Press saying, yeah, we're going to go have this marketplace where you can get our historic photojournalism. And, of course, the Associated Press has everything that you could possibly imagine, anything you can think of that has happened in history. So stay tuned. NFTs are for real. It's just a question of, are you overpaying for them or can you get the one you want, right? How about this? UPS announced it's going to handle 60 million returns between November 14th and January 22nd. That's a new record for the company, a 10% jump from last year. And why? Because more people probably ordered online than ever. Not that that wasn't already happening, but then that's how you're returning them. So, you know, there you go. How about this one? This is just the facts. Foxtrot is a startup aimed to reinvent the convenience store. Yes, they raised $100 million and they plan to expand their physical footprint by opening 25 new stores in 2020. So you think of the convenience store, and I think convenience stores mean something different to different people. I like convenience stores. I grew up around convenience stores, right? Like, oh, go down the street to, you know, the Five and Dime, go here, whatever the store was. And it seemed like we were always running in a convenience store for coffee, for paper, for some last minute item, you know, whatever it is. So these Foxtrots, the locations they're going to open up in are going to be, like in Austin. They're going to open up in Boston's Back Bay, in Chicago's landmark Willis Building and Tribune Towers near Wrigley Field, and they're establishing other stores in Nashville, Tennessee in 2023, and so in some pretty big areas. And I think that makes sense in a way, right? Because if we get back to whatever our new life is like, and you think you're in some of these buildings and you're commuting, a convenience store is really what you need, because you probably don't have an easy access. I mean, it's not that you don't, but if you can go to work and grab what you need, whatever it is, you know, maybe it's aspirin, Aleve, whatever last minute thing, they do pretty well. And then you know that it would be easy. It's a zip in and a zip out kind of deal. And I think that's what it's about. I think it's the zip in and zip out thing that we like. Anyway, fascinating to see how this all goes, right? I'm just saying. Okay. How about this? In 1986, the NCAA adopted Prop 48, which mandated minimum high school grades and test scores for students who wanted to play sports. And this was really a very big deal, because there was so much made about what was happening with grades and who was getting scholarships once you got to, you know, college, etc. So this, again, this is what happened on January 13th, and they required minimum high school grades and scores on standardized college entrance exams for student athletes to participate as freshmen. And it passed by a large margin, and it had a huge disproportional impact on black male athletes. According to NCAA statistics, only 51% of black male athletes would have qualified for the 1982 season had that bylaw already been in effect. And this was from the Hartford Courant, you know, the paper there. They say there's no question that some of the most skilled, highly skilled athletes would not be competing as freshmen with this Prop 48. Prop 48 required incoming freshmen to maintain a 2.0 grade point average in the core curriculum of 11 courses in English and math and science, and as well as a score of 700 or more on the SAT or 15 on the ACT. And of course, you know, the SAT and the ACT are standardized college entrance exams. The day after Prop 48 was passed, Georgetown basketball coach John Thompson walked up the court in protest before a game against Boston College. I had to, like, go back and look at that, because I guess I just never thought about it. But just so you know, just the facts, the NCAA has adjusted the regulation over the years, but it's remained in effect since 1986. So that, if, I'm sure you've heard it, but, or maybe you haven't, but Prop 48. We want you to get the grades, but we need you on the court. We need you on the field. All right, that's a wrap, as they say, for Just the Facts and for the show. Thank you so much for listening to this version of it. It's 2022, people. Really, seriously, make it count.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113 That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.